All 13 million people, Israeli and Palestinian. Now, I don't know, and we have no position, how many states exactly, one state, two states, five and a half states, would be the right political answer to that. We're not a peace organization, so don't focus on that. The essential question is what would be the rights, what would be the level of equality and dignity for the people who will live in that future agreed upon solution. And there is one absolutely incompatible future with the realization of those rights, which is what we're living in, a one-state reality that includes within it a perpetual occupation.
We're going to end it here, and then we're going to continue with part two of the discussion and post it online under WebExes at democracynow.org. Chagai Elad is the executive director of the human rights group B'Tselem. It testified for only the second time before the UN Security Council. I'll be speaking in Gainesville, Florida tonight, Melbourne, Florida tomorrow. Check democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5 o'clock and 20 seconds right there on the dot. Coming up next is your Friday evening news, but first this.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Folk Music Society's concert season, which this month features the Kathy Kallick Bluegrass Band, October 19th, 7:30 p.m. at the Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland. Kathy Kallick is an award-winning singer-songwriter, having received a Grammy and international bluegrass music accolades. Her five-piece band features more IBMA winners, including local fiddler Annie Staninetz, a former Emerging Artist of the Year. Portland Folk Music Society concerts in November will bring the Honey Whiskey Trio and Legends of the Celtic Harp with Patrick Ball on a special pre-holiday program. PFS presents concerts monthly, now through next May. For more information, go to the website, kboo.fm, and look on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Friends of Noise October Youth Showcase on Saturday, October 20th from 6 to 11 p.m. at the Rockwood Center in Portland. Local bands The Day, White Lotus, and Seven will be playing the Friends of Noise Youth Showcase this month. Friends of Noise is a nonprofit that works to create more space for all ages music and arts and aims to open a music and arts venue. Again, that's the Friends of Noise October Youth Showcase featuring The Day, White Lotus, and Seven on Saturday, October 20th from 6 to 11 p.m. at the Rockwood Center, 17805 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Come up in the party, get drinking in the lobby.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. And guess what? It's time for the Friday evening news. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Levin & Levine, LLP, attorneys specializing in personal injury law. Levin & Levine offices are located in Southeast Portland and Old Town Sherwood. More information available by phone at 503-946-8708 and online at levinandlevine.com. And now, time for your KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland's Office of Neighborhood Involvement is closing.
Chickenpox attacks a Washington State elementary school.
And Israel moves tanks to Gaza.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 19th, 2018. I'm Jasmine Moneymaker.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. Anti-vaccination sentiment in Battleground, Washington has led to an outbreak of chickenpox at an elementary school there. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, quote, chickenpox is a very contagious disease caused by the varicella zoster virus. It causes a blister-like rash, itching, tiredness, and fever. The rash appears first on the stomach, back, and face, and can spread over the entire body, causing between 250 and 500 itchy blisters. Chickenpox can be as serious, especially in babies, adults, and people with weakened immune systems. The best way to prevent chickenpox, says the CDC, is to get the chickenpox vaccination, end quote. Students at Daybreak Primary School will be prevented from returning to class unless they can present proof of vaccination or immunity. Staff must do the same or else show that they were born before 1980. At Daybreak Elementary, more than 13% of the students were exempted from at least one vaccine, with the majority of those taking a personal exemption. That compares to less than 5% of Washington students generally being exempt from vaccines. The CDC says that the chickenpox virus varicella, which also causes shingles in later life, quote, spreads easily from people with chickenpox to others who have never had the disease or been vaccinated. The virus spreads mainly by touching or breathing in the virus particles that come from chickenpox blisters, and possibly through tiny droplets from infected people that get into the air after they breathe or talk, for example, end quote. Chickenpox rarely kills, though a four-year-old child died from the disease in 2012.
Thousands of refugees from Honduras and other Central American nations successfully made their way to a small town on the border between Guatemala and Mexico today. The refugee groups arrived in caravans of buses and trucks, and hundreds more trekked through El Salvador on foot to cross the border into Mexico. For many, the final destination is the United States, and their mission is to obtain asylum in the U.S. Their migration is the result of extreme violence and government corruption that they face in their homelands. Honduras is Central America's second poorest country and has one of the world's highest homicide rates. Its government has historically been selected or overthrown by the U.S. CIA since the doomed election of Jacobo Arbenz in 1954. The U.S. president threatened to close the U.S.-Mexico border and cut off financial aid if Mexico doesn't gain control over their population and, quote, stop this onslaught of refugees. In an interview with Fox News, Geronimo Gutierrez, Mexico's ambassador to the U.S., said, quote, we obviously are sensitive to the humanitarian situation that we encounter, but we have also made very clear that there is no legal ground on which Mexico can issue a permit by which people can just go through Mexico towards the United States, end quote. The mass migration of refugees, coupled with pressures and threats from the U.S., forced the Mexican government to ask the UNHCR for help in identifying which persons are legitimately asylum seekers. Those asylum seekers who are deemed unworthy of international protection will be deported back to their homeland. Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto has not been responsive. Some claim this is because the president only has 2 months left in office. 60.9% of Hondurans are living in poverty, according to the World Bank, and it has been reported that Hondurans are extorted by gangs into paying protection taxes. It's claimed that gangs or organized crime run the state, including the Honduran president, Juan Orlando Hernandez, who was the first president to serve a second term after the country's Supreme Court lifted the re-election ban in 2015.
The tiny walled-off enclave of Gaza in Israel is being surrounded by 60 tanks and armored personnel carriers amid ongoing protests against the 11-year siege. The move comes after Israeli Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman told reporters that Israel must launch another war against Gaza to enforce its blockade. Lieberman also ordered the closing of crossings between Gaza and Israel and again reduced the fishing zone off Gaza Beach in an act of collective punishment of the Palestinians living in Gaza. The situation in Gaza has been tilting towards more violence in the past weeks as Israel launched airstrikes in retaliation for a rocket from the Palestinian enclave that had damaged a house in the nearby Beersheba. The Palestinian group Hamas denied that their fighters had launched the rocket. A Palestinian official quoted by Reuters said, quote, the situation is delicate. No one wants a war. Palestinian factions are demanding an end to the Israeli blockade that has strangled life and business in Gaza, end quote. The Gaza Strip has been under a devastating Israeli siege since 2007 and has seen three wars since 2008. There's been a fresh wave of tension since March 30th, which marked the start of protests called the Great March of Return. More than 200 Palestinians have been killed and some 21,500 others have been wounded since then.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonio Gonzalez. Saying it's long overdue, Alaska Governor Bill Walker formally apologized to Alaska Natives. It came at the conclusion of his address to the Alaska Federation of Natives Conference in Anchorage.
For being forced into boarding schools, I apologize. For forced to abandon your native language and adopt a foreign one, I apologize. For erasing your history, I apologize. For the generational and historical trauma you have suffered, I apologize. This apology is long overdue. It is but one step in hundreds more to go on this journey towards truth, reconciliation, and healing.
The Alaska Native vote is important as Walker faces a three-way race to keep his office. National Congress of American Indians Director Jacqueline Peta revealed her personal struggles with past sexual and physical abuse during her speech to the AFN conference. Speaking about missing and murdered women and domestic violence, Peta said she wouldn't be where she is now without the Alaska Native Resource Center and the AWARE shelter in Juneau.
Like many women in Alaska, molested as a child, raped as a teenager, and violently abused as a young wife. But because of the strength of the women who gather together in the violence against women, all women have a choice, and all women have ability to be what they want to be.
A Canadian singer-songwriter's one-woman show features music and candid stories about her life. Among other things, her narrative touches on her experience as a sexual abuse survivor. KNBA's Tripp Krause talked to her before her recent appearance in Anchorage about her journey and her message.
Originally from Nunavut, Canada, Susan Aguicar confuses pop and country songwriting with Inuit folk music.
You don't have to suffer in silence.
She's also very outspoken about sexual violence. Her own journey began in the early 1990s after the court case with her own abuser ended.
After the whole case unrolled, I left because I felt like justice hadn't actually been met, and that the system itself really does re-victimize us.
She says she felt like she had no other choice but to leave her hometown, but that decision eventually led to her music career.
I ended up on this incredible 25-year journey of healing through songwriting and singing and exploration and art and everything.
Arctic Mission Adventure is sponsoring an event that brings Aguicar to Anchorage. The faith-based mission organization provides services and support to Alaska's bush villages.
You know, when we grow up in these environments, the more stories we have and the more we can go back home with these stories, the more we give them hope. The more we can change that environment a little bit at a time.
For National Native News, I'm Tripp Krause.
Oh, I know that the pain can seem like an ocean, but I just do
it. Officials at the U.S. Interior Department said its internal watchdog is not being replaced by a political appointee. This clarification came after an email late last week from Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson, who said a HUD Assistant Secretary, Suzanne Israel Tufts, was leaving HUD to become Inspector General at Interior. But National Public Radio reported that a spokesman for Interior said the email had false information in it, and that while Tufts was referred by the White House as a potential candidate, she was not offered the Inspector General job. The initial email raised concerns, since the Inspector General is currently conducting several investigations of Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at aarp.org.
And by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at sanofsky.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News at 5:30. Stay tuned for Counterpoint. At 6, it's Bread and Roses with Sojourner Truth Radio. Then at 7, The Struggle with your host, Alyssa Pariah, speaks with Teresa Rufford. Tonight's weather will be cool with a low in the mid-40s, and tomorrow's high will be in the low 70s amid partly cloudy skies. Today in history, in 1953, Ray Bradbury's acclaimed science fiction novel, Fahrenheit 451, was first published by Ballantine Books. Considered by many to be Bradbury's best work, the book tells the story of Guy Montag, a fireman in the dystopian future dominated by idle minds, authoritarian government, and brutal censorship. The title is referenced to the temperature at which paper burns, and in Montag's world, firemen are tasked with finding and burning books, along with the homes that hide them and the people who love them. Despite being a staple on high school English classes for decades, Fahrenheit 451 has been banned or challenged in several school districts throughout the United States, most recently in 2006 by a Texas district distraught over dirty talk and unfavorable references to God. The quote of the day from the first part of Fahrenheit 451 goes out to those board members. Quote, "With school turning out more runners, jumpers, racers, tinkerers, grabbers, snatchers, flyers, and swimmers instead of examiners, critics, knowers, and imaginative creators, the word intellectual, of course, became the swear word it deserved to be. You always dread the unfamiliar." End quote.
The University of Southern California has proposed to pay out approximately $2,500 to each woman who encountered Dr. Tyndall, a gynecologist at the University Health Clinic, and they've also agreed to pay an additional $250,000 to the more than 460 women who have sued the university in federal court. Tyndall was the sole full-time gynecologist at the university for around 30 years and has been accused of harassment, groping, and abuse by hundreds of women. He has not been charged or convicted of molestation, though an attorney for the litigants has called for a state investigation. Prosecutors in the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Sex Crimes Division are currently considering whether to file criminal charges in dozens of potential cases. At this time, no charges have been filed against the doctor. Tyndall's defense attorney, Leonard Levine, has said that his client denies the charges and insists that his medical examinations were, quote, "always within the standard of care." The university told CNN, quote, "We are aware of the lawsuits. We will be seeking a prompt and fair resolution that is respectful of our former students. We are committed to providing the women of USC with the best, most thorough, and respectful health care services of any university," end quote. The proposed settlement does not resolve the hundreds of claims made in state court, but allows for those claimants to join in the payout.
The Portland Water Bureau returned to 100% Bull Run water on October 17th. The water has been blended with a portion from wells at Columbia South Shore well field since June 19th. Both are high-quality water sources that meet or surpass all federal and state drinking water regulations, according to the Portland officials. Ongoing protection of the Bull Run is the pride of Portland citizens. According to the Portland Water Bureau website, quote, "It will take 1 to 8 days, depending on location, for 100% Bull Run water to move through the system," end quote. The Bull Run is a protected forest reserve in the mountains above Portland, and during the summer, its water is supplemented by 26 wells on the south side of the Columbia River near Troutdale.
Portland's neighborhood system and commitment to public participation has been nationally recognized for decades. Back in 1974, neighborhood-level participation was formalized with the creation of the Office of Neighborhood Associations. In 1999, the name was changed to the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Under Mayor Wheeler, this office quietly changed names again, this time with fundamental changes to its mission. For more, KBOO's Joe Meyer spoke with neighborhood activist and urban philosopher Michael Mahaffey.
Portland has 95 officially recognized neighborhoods, each represented by a volunteer-based neighborhood association. These have served as a liaison between residents and Portland city government since 1974. Earlier this year, under Mayor Wheeler, the Office of Neighborhood Involvement was changed to the Office of Community and Civic Life. Is this a move towards greater inclusivity or part of a larger mission to mow down Portland's grassroots democracy? Dr. Michael Mahaffey is a neighborhood activist and executive director of Portland's Sustasis Foundation.
We have a problem in Portland. One of the most fundamental problems is our governance, the fact that we have a very centralized government system. We have a council that's elected at large, and that means that a lot of people are not really very well represented, especially in the east side and other areas of the city. And then we have the commissioner system, which compounds the problem. So the neighborhood system is really a kind of vital way of providing more bottom-up accountability and capability within the system. But unfortunately, what's happened over time, I think, is that we have a kind of adversarial relationship between the neighborhoods and the city. There isn't a strong enough collaborative approach, or isn't a strong enough sort of democratic process that involves people and allows us to work together to solve our problems. And I think what's happened is that the city has decided that it's time to throw the neighborhoods under the bus, to be blunt about it. Unfortunately, what the city has decided to do is to hire a marketing firm and essentially rebrand the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, and they've taken out the word neighborhood altogether. So the identity now is the Office of Community and Civic Life, and the emphasis is very clearly not on neighborhood associations to the degree that it was before. And I think that's a fundamental mistake because, as I said before, I think the grassroots system that we have in Portland is really an essential balance to the over-centralized system at City Hall. You know, we need more grassroots democracy. We need more representation of people in their own neighborhoods dealing with their own challenges.
Would you say it's a move from geographically based to more identity based? And what's the implications of that?
Well, there's a very good motivation to involve people who have been marginalized. And, of course, Portland has a shocking history of racism and inequality, geographic inequality, and that does have to be addressed. And I think the way to do that is to do it through the neighborhood association system, which is accountable, is at the local grassroots level, and that's where people have their strongest voices. And that's been the case for 30 or 40 years, ever since we've had the neighborhood system, that people have their strongest voice through their neighborhoods and through their neighborhood associations. That's where the grassroots power really is. I mean, that's what made Portland such a great place coming out of the era of the freeways and bulldozing neighborhoods in the 60s. The neighborhood associations became very active in saying, no, we want a better city. We want a more equitable, more diverse, more walkable city, and that's what happened coming out of the 1970s and 80s, and I think we're sort of resting on our laurels at this point and failing to address these fundamental structural problems that we have. Maybe it's a natural tendency to, scapegoat people who have real concerns about what's happening in their neighborhoods, and it seems to me there's two ways to handle that. One is to really try earnestly to have a dialogue and a constructive approach, and the other is to just say, you're just a bunch of NIMBYs and, you don't count somehow because you hadn't checked the right box or whatever. And I think that's very unfortunate and not really the way we need to go if we're going to address our problems, because, ultimately we do need to address these challenges of affordability and gentrification, exclusion, equity in the city, but we're not going to do that by, dividing and conquering. We're not going to do it with tokenism, and we're not going to do it with this kind of build-based baby build approach of just, you know, jamming in as many housing units as we can without paying attention to where they are and what they are. You know, Vancouver in Canada tried that build baby build approach, and it was not effective, obviously. Vancouver is still one of the most expensive cities in the world.
Do you feel like development projects like RIP and the changes at the ONI are related in some way?
There's a general problem that we have to resist, and the great urbanist Jane Jacobs talked about this a lot, of, you know, recognizing the influence of money, the influence of vested interest in people who are looking to do a development project. You know, not all developers are should have a bad name, but we have to be careful about people who have different interests and different economic interests that might be counter to the long-term interest of the city. And that's what the democratic process is for. You know, we shouldn't just be asked to roll over and let developers do whatever they want. This is a democracy. We have the right to say what happens in our public realm. In fact, we have a duty to say what happens in our public realm and to work together with those folks. So I think the atmosphere that we have right now reminds me a lot, frankly, of the atmosphere that Jane Jacobs fought back in the 1960s and 70s. And, you know, we get people with concentrated power and economic interests, and they begin making arguments that sound good, but you have to ask, is that really in the public interest what they're advocating, or are they simply, you know, finding ways to make their own agenda sound good to everybody else? I think that's the case in many cases right now.
Jane Jacobs, of course, is a hero of many people. How did she achieve her success?
Well, she was, of course, involved here in Portland. She came here and advised people and was a real champion of what we were doing here, resisting freeways, resisting the demolition of whole neighborhoods like the Inner East Side, African-American displacement, what James Baldwin called Negro removal. And this is something that I think we really need to recognize, that the equity and the challenges that that are ultimately at stake in how the city is working, how the dynamics are working, and how we are politically engaged at every level to make sure that the city is working for everybody, that we really do have a city for all. By the way, we're having a showing of the documentary about Jane Jacobs today at the Northwest Neighborhood Cultural Center at 7 p.m. And it's a really great film called Citizen Jane, Battle for the City. And we're going to talk about her influence in Portland and many other cities and where we are today and what the challenges still remain for us here in Portland.
That was neighborhood activist and executive director of Portland's Systasis Foundation, Dr. Michael Mahaffey. Democracy in Portland has widely recognized structural problems, including a centralized, commissioner-based government and at-large elections. Portland's neighborhood associations had been a counterbalancing and democratizing influence. Now, Mayor Wheeler's city council is throwing neighborhoods under the bus. The neighborhood associations are being powered down, and through Wheeler's residential infill project, single-family neighborhoods are set to be bulldozed by an unrestrained free market, all for the benefit of developers, realtors, and other special interests. Dr. Mahaffey is hosting a screening of Citizen Jane, Battle for the City, followed by a panel discussion, tonight at 7 o'clock, 1819 Northwest Everett in Portland. The event is free, and this is Joe Meyer with KBOO News.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 19th, 2018. Here are the main points once again. Portland's Office of Neighborhood Involvement is closing. Chickenpox attacks a Washington State elementary school. And Israel moves tanks to Gaza. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Tammy Habateas, Kathy Seitz, Jasmine Moneymaker, Teresa Mitchell, and Joe Meyer. The producer is Teresa Mitchell, and our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama. The interim directors of Evening News and Public Affairs are Sam Bowman and Teresa Mitchell. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, and a text service is on the website blog. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson-Osterland.
And I'm Jasmine Moneymaker. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's More Talk Radio. Cecil talks with representatives of Portland's Gray Panthers. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour burrows down to the roots of the great issues of our time. At 10, on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein welcomes two organizers who are fighting the development of liquid natural gas terminals in the Northwest. At 11, Making Contact looks at the crossroads in the struggle against climate change and the activists forging new ways forward. And at 11:30, Voices for the Animals talks to artist Sue Coe about her new book, Zooicide, Seeing Cruelty Demanding Abolition. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. Good night, Linda. Good night, Jenna.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. It's 5:30, and that means it's time for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, the horror stories are real about migrant children pulled from their parents at the U.S.-Mexico border, sometimes locked in cages, sometimes given up for adoption while ostensibly waiting to be reunited with families the government had no plan for reuniting them with. But when corporate media tell the story through the White House's cruel prism,